Abbey 104.
Good morning, it's 11:05, it's Abbey 104, it's Sunday morning, and it's Folk Tales. And in the studio this morning, I have no less than the Mayor of Sherborne, Jill Hogben. And good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Terry, how are you?
Yeah, very, very good, thank you, and thank you for coming in and doing this.
You're very welcome.
And, well, first of all, what does the Mayor of Sherborne do?
That's a really good question. The Mayor of Sherborne looks after the town. We work and we head the council, all the council meetings. And there are lots of duties in terms of helping the community, being the figurehead for the town and kind of being there when needed.
OK, so it's not just about opening fetes and wearing a rather fancy piece of jewellery.
No, but it's really nice to do that, I have to say. Yeah, we've had some fantastic fetes and some events over the summer I've been along to. We walked round the Yetman Hospital on Friday, and I went up to the international school to meet with the children there and the headmaster. So it's a really different, engaging, I think, useful job. So.
And how long have you been mayor?
Well, we were elected in 2015. That was the last time we were elected. And I was deputy mayor for a year. I'm mayor this year. And I'll hand over to the next person in May 2018.
I see. OK, so you're relatively a short while into your mayoral term at the moment then.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. But, you know, we work for you. We work for the people of Sherborne. So I see my role as a servant. I see my role as a helper. I see my role as making connections with people, perhaps putting people together who perhaps everybody's working for the same thing, but just putting groups of people in touch with each other. So,
okay. All right. Well, look, we're going to explore that in a lot more detail and talk a little bit more about you and how you came to be mayor, ultimately. But let's have some music first. So you've chosen Petula Clark as your opening track. Tell us about this.
Well, this was the very first song I ever remember hearing. I was 5 years old. We were travelling. I was born in Bournemouth. We were travelling up to our new house in Camberley in Surrey. And this was playing as I was travelling, age five. And I remember that the lights, it was dark, the lights were coming through the car, my father's car, and just travelling on my way.
And it obviously left an impression. Let's have it. It's Downtown by Petula Clark. Here we go.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter there. You can forget all your troubles, forget all your cares. So go downtown. Things will be great when you're downtown. No finer place for sure, downtown. Everything's waiting for you. Downtown. Don't hang around and let your problems surround you. There are movie shows downtown. Maybe you know some little places to go to where they never close. Downtown, just listen to the rhythm of a gentle bossa nova. You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over. Happy again. The lights are much brighter there. You can forget all your troubles, forget all your cares. So go downtown, where all the lights are bright down. We can forget all our troubles, forget all our cares. So go downtown, things will be great when you're downtown. Don't wait a minute more, downtown. Everything's waiting for you.
That's Petula Clark there with Downtown from 1964, way back in 1964, from the album of the same name, written by Tony Hatch. Only got to number two in the UK, which I thought was a bit surprising because it was a big international hit, really, and something of her signature tune now. So anyway, great record. In the studio, I have Jill Hogman, who's manager, mayor of Sherborne.
Hello, Terry.
Well, maybe mayor, manager of Sherborne as well, possibly.
I don't think my fellow councillors would agree with me with that at all.
Probably some democratic issue at stake there. Anyway, Jill, we talked just a moment ago by way of introduction about what the mayor does and how you became mayor. But let's go back. Let's go back in years and talk about your early life. So where were you born, around here or away somewhere?
I was born in Bournemouth in Dorset, so I'm a Dorset Durr. You know, I'm a, what is it, thick in arm and thick in head. So I was born in Winton in Bournemouth. Should I say my age? I don't think so. On Christmas Day. So I was a Christmas Day baby. And my mother always says my father had a can of cold baked beans eaten with a fork for his Christmas lunch.
Great story.
Because I was an emergency baby, so... there we go.
I see. All right. And so early life was in Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And what about your parents? What occupations were they?
My father was a salesman for Bel Air and Unilever, covering sort of all the Southwest and the Channel Islands. So he'd often be away. And my mother was a sort of stay-at-home mum for myself and my brother, Toby, who was 4 years younger than me. And he was a real tearaway. He had bright red hair and he would kind of leader of the pack. Even from a very, very early age. And we had a lovely beagle called Chimer, who was the greediest dog you could ever imagine. You know, he'd be into dustbins and he'd be coming back with a great big fat tummy. We'd have to be rushing him down to the vet. So really happy childhood, playing on the beach with our own little beach hut. So really, really good memories there. So, yeah.
And school in Bournemouth?
We moved up to Camberley when I was five. So I went to school in Frimley, Prior Heath. And then I went on to Tomlinscote, the big new comprehensive. When they were just opening, they were just becoming more popular.
And happy school days. What was school like?
Well, we could kind of only afford for one of us to go to a private school. So my brother, who had dyslexia, went to a private school and hated it. And I would have loved to have, you know, gone and somewhere like that. I never really got a chance. So, but I remember Tomlinscote was big. I remember I was a prefect. And when Toby eventually joined, I remember standing at the top of a long, big flight of stairs, about four flights up, and saying, "You there, boy, whatever you're doing up there, stop, stop." I think he was spitting down onto the floor. Right. I said, "You stop it." And it was my own brother. So,
how embarrassing.
It was, rather.
Okay, so you were the older sister.
Yes.
And so, all right, you went to school up around the Surrey area. And father, you say, was a salesman.
Yes, he joined, after a while, he joined Shell in London. So he would commute each day on the train up to London, Shell Mech's house. So I do remember that I used to have wonderful times with him up there. And back in the days of the sort of, you know, longer lunch breaks and driving in fast cars and going around to motor circuits. And so he did a lot of entertaining, and they'd often pack Toby and I off with a lunchbox. And I remember back in Brands Hatch days, I was sworn at quite spectacularly by Graham Hill. He was resting his quite a poorly leg on a barrel, and I came up and sort of said, "Excuse me, can I have your autograph?" And he told me where to go.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, incredibly happy days, rolling in and out of lovely places, and again, getting to love cars and motorsport and all that goes with it.
I see. So your father's connection with Shell brought about the motorsport side of it, did it?
Yes, yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I see. And I think you said you moved away from Surrey, didn't you, at some point? Did you go to the Peak District, or was that the father? That...
My parents are both from Chesterfield originally, from there. And they met when they were very young, and they, you know, we were there. Then when they retired up to the Peak District National Park.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's the connection.
That's the connection. Yeah. And they bought a house on the Duke of Devonshire's estate. And my father used to show people over the White Peak and all the plane wrecks. And he was a great walker, very, very fit endurance walker, endurance runner. And that's what eventually, I think, led him to join Special Services as a territorial.
So. Oh, gosh, right. So quite an interesting background there.
Yes.
Okay. So mainly school then was in Surrey, and you came to a point when you were leaving. Mm-hmm. You okay at school? Good academically?
I think I tried hard. I think Toby got there because he'd do no revision. He'd turn up on the day and he'd know it somehow. Whereas I was a worker. I was the one who actually had to do lots of prep to get where I got to. I strangely enough, I wanted to be a geologist, really. But I wasn't clever enough with maths. So I decided to study English. But not just easy English, it's the sort of the psychology of English. The words you choose, you know, tell us a lot about the kind of person you are, the words you select. And I did a side study of Middle English. So I'm one of the very few people who can actually, you know, speak Middle English. So, you know, a pauvre widow, some deal stop in Asia. I can talk to you about Pilgrim's Progress and Chaucer, you know, ad infinitum. Didn't really do me much good, but...
I haven't brought my copy of The Nun's Priest's Tale with me, but perhaps we could look at it afterwards.
We could.
Okay, so you left school in Surrey, and then you went to Bangor at the University of Wales.
I went to University of Wales at Cardiff to study English.
Cardiff. Yeah,
And I'm kind of the only person who'd go to Wales to study English, but I had a fantastic professor, Dr. Wynne, who could listen to you and then say, you went to school, you were born in Bournemouth, and then you moved to, and he could tell from your accent and the tonality where you were born, where you were brought up, and a lot about you, and he was a fantastic mimic.
So. And did that bring about the interest then in the Middle English? Was that how it came about?
Yes, I'm very interested in social history. I'm reading the histories of Sherborne at the moment. I'm up to the 12th century, so I'm very interested. I mean, this area here where we're sitting today in Coombe, you know, this has got a fantastic history. You know, the Sherborne, the clear stream after which the town is named, came from here. And there's lots of interesting stories, interesting tales about Sherborne I'm just beginning to explore.
Oh, excellent. Right. So you were at Cardiff then for 3 years, and you were sponsored by Shell, I think you told me.
Yeah, I was sponsored by Shell. I think they saw something in me and they thought I'd be quite a good manager. I did like managing when I left, but I joined Marks and Spencer as a senior management trainee.
Okay. All right. How did that play out with Shell?
I think my father smoothed it over, but I did like the retail side, and I did like being in the day in Marks and Spencer. You became either store management, HR management, or operational management, and I went into HR management.
Okay, let's before we get too much into your early career, let's have your second track, which is Eva Cassidy.
Yeah, a little bit of sadness here, really. Eva Cassidy was a huge favourite of my father, who died in 2013. But Eva died of melanoma, aged only 33, I beg your pardon. And it's a little bit of a kind of a difficult thing because my brother died, aged 29, of the same thing, right. Toby. So, yes.
Okay, so this is a reflective one.
Mm.
Okay, it's Eva Cassidy with Fields of Gold.
You remember me when the west wind moves among the fields of barley. You can tell the sun in his jealous sky when we walked in fields of gold. So she took her love for to gaze a while among the fields of barley. In his arms she fell as her hair came down among the fields of gold. Will you stay with me? Will you be my love among the fields of barley? And you can tell the sun in his jealous sky when we walked in fields of gold. I never made promises lightly, and there have been some that I've broken, but I swear in the days still left we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.
Wonderful Eva Cassidy with Fields of Gold, recorded in 1996, which actually was the year of her death. And as Jill referred to, the fact she died at the tragically early age of 33. The track was originally by Sting from 3 years earlier. Mm. My guest in the studio is Jill Hogben, who's the mayor of Sherborne. And
thank you, Terry.
Jill, we've been talking about your early life and the fact that you lived in Surrey and then you went off to university in Cardiff.
Mm-hmm.
And you left there and went into management training with Marks and Spencer. So tell us what the idea was there. What attracted you to that?
Well, I decided I like people, working with people, people management. And I decided I would be, I knew a bit about employment law, and I thought that would be a good career for me. So I joined Marks and Spencer after particularly rigorous exams and interviews, with panel interviews, etc. And they first sent me down to Bognor Regis. So I was a new trainee down in Bognor Regis, and it was Christmas time. And I was working the store, as you do as a trainee. You do work on every section, you do every job. So I was putting out the turkeys, and then they said, OK, it's time to open the doors, Jill. And there was a huge queue outside of people tapping on the door, waiting for it to be opened. So I thought, like, I can't let people down. So I rushed and I opened the top of the door, big glass doors. And then I knelt down to open the bottom door. And I was just too late to open the door. The door was pushed I fell backwards and people were just charging in over me. And it was the most, it was the funniest thing, Terry. It was absolutely hilarious. So it's one of my
You see this on television, don't you, at the post-Christmas sales time, don't you?
I was trampled by a pensioner. That's my claim to fame.
Okay, so you had a bit of a baptism of fire with Marks and Spencers. How long did you stay with them?
Oh, I think it was only about 3 years, something like that. After that, I was moved to up to Baker Street to finish my training in London, and that was great. But good values from Marks and Spencer about customer service, about getting to the customer's level. If the customer is disabled, you know, you crouch down and talk to them. So just started to educate me in terms of inclusion and being diverse and being aware of other people's needs, I suppose.
All very good basic management training, isn't it? And, of course, Marks and Spencer's then had a reputation for being pretty much the gold standard for customer service, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, very fierce attitude towards, you know, things like wearing tights and nail polish on the tills. You know, you had to be of a certain standard, but a very, very good, staff service. You know, the free services for staff. So yes, a really good place to work for.
But you didn't stay. You stayed 3 years, but then decided to move on.
Yes.
What came next?
Well, next was the Automobile Association. Oh, okay. And I was a regional trainer, and then I was a head office trainer down in Basingstoke, which I really enjoyed. And then I moved on to, I guess, the best company I've ever worked for, which was Xerox.
And where was that based?
Well, it was based in Uxbridge, and then I moved down to Marlow, which was a bit of a drive for me every day. But I was with the best people, and I was one of their international training team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I had the most wonderful time. My first day working for Xerox was on a plane going out to West Virginia, where they had the world's largest training centre. They had a 5,000 student training centre, which was so big. You had colour-coded corridors because, there were so many people and the building, the area was so big. And many of the spaces were underground. So it was a huge learning experience for me. Working with other trainers, there was lots of African American, lots of Native American, Native Indian trainers, and a huge bunch of us got together, and it was a really fantastic experience.
And this again built on the diversity which you mentioned a moment ago, which started with Marks and Spencer's.
Absolutely.
And you referred to just a moment ago also that Xerox were the best people you ever worked for.
Yes, I think in terms of how they treated the staff, how they treated the customers, you know, the customer care, the way, you know, the manager said very clearly, if you don't need to go to a meeting, don't go. You know, send your apologies. Only go to meetings where there is some value for you to go. And they had a very charismatic leader, very charismatic CEO called Paul Allaire. And this was the days when we were bringing in quality, total quality management. And there was a famous story where everybody was invited to this huge auditorium in America. And on the front of the podium, it says, quality is not the way we do things around here. And as the auditorium filled up with staff, there was no managers in attendance. People going, yeah, absolutely right. Quality is not the way we should be doing things. We've been focusing on quality too long. It's too much of a faff. It gets in the way of our normal jobs. And some people were sort of arguing that case. And the sound was building and building and building. And then Paul Allaire walks in on his own, goes up to the sign and rips down the knot. And then he says very quietly into the microphones, if you agree with the first statement, leave now, you're fired. And that was a big, you know, those messages resonated across the whole service. And quality was the way we did everything. So I really treasure my time there with Xerox. It was a great opportunity. I was working out in Russia. That was the days in the 90s where you'd take jeans and you'd take CDs to give out to team members. I was working out in Eastern Europe and Spain and Marlow and down in Mitcheldean. We had a centre down there and Lille and Venray and Coslada. So it was a really fantastic experience for me working for Xerox.
Sounds incredibly good and exciting. Exciting times. You stayed with them for 6 years, I think you said.
Yes, I did.
And
yes.
You left in 1990 or thereabouts. And why did you leave if it was such a great experience?
Well, I was having my first child. Oh, okay. So I had Fabian, my first daughter, and then decided to move on to the Pru. I was kind of poached by the Prudential down in Reading, and I worked there as the life and pensions training manager for some years.
Okay. And that's, well, okay, so it's a similar type of role, was it? Or was it something moving on for you, was it really?
It started off as a similar kind of role, really in training and HR type stuff. But I was interviewed by the head of the Asia offices, and he said he wanted someone to go out for, do some secondment out there and go and train all the country managers of the six countries where we had banks. So Hong Kong, Singapore, the Philippines and so on. And I was lucky enough to get that opportunity to go out for 2 years to do training. So really interesting, you know, taking the same information out to different country managers and country management teams about some of the Pru's values and the way we were doing things. And of course, coping with some of those cultural issues. Some management teams wouldn't speak until their managing director had spoken. Some would wait respectfully for him, it would be a him, to make comment before they added anything. And it was normally something in support. So it was kind of being a bit tough, really, about challenging things if they weren't right.
Interesting. Invaluable training, though.
I think so.
Yeah. And so that between those two jobs, that exposed you to Eastern Europe and the Far East. So you did quite a bit of travelling.
Yes, I did.
Is that enjoyable?
It was very, very enjoyable. But I always made sure I came back for my family because family comes first.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so you stayed with Prudential, what, about 4 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, what made you leave that?
Well, I guess other opportunities. They offered me time as a consultant. They said, if you want to go as a consultant for us, we'll offer you X pounds for 100 days a year.
Oh, I see.
So I decided to start my own business, and I was able then to be more free with where I lived and where I moved to. So that's the start of I guess, my conversation with my parents about moving down to the Southwest.
I see. Okay. Well, so the business, actually, many people who decide to leave the security of employment and go into self-employment, that's quite a wrench, isn't it? And quite a big decision, a lot of risk involved. But that was slightly padded here then, because you had a bit of a safety net.
It was rather, yes. Mm. So I started my own company called Prosapia for Wisdom. We moved down. My parents were already living in on the Somerset Dorset borders, and we lived together to see whether we'd kill each other or not. Basically, we live with them. Our whole family moved down together, and actually, we loved it. We were very close as a family because of my young brother's death at an early age. I think it's really pulled the whole family together.
Yeah. Sure.
So yes, my parents lived on the top floor of this big tithe barn. We lived on the ground floor, and we shared the middle floor. So we had chickens and dogs, and it was a brilliant time.
Lovely. And we should say, in the middle of this, you had another daughter.
Yes, indeed, we had Hermione.
Hermione, yep.
Who's now 15. I think she was on the radio with me a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, indeed.
And she's a joy and a delight. Fabian, my eldest daughter, is 26, so she's very grown up and she's very serious. I feel a bit like, she's like Safi, because she's always got the dates right, and she's telling me where I got things wrong, and she's very well organised.
And so, she's a social worker, I think.
She's a social worker, yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
And but Hermione's at school.
Yes. She's 15. She's incredibly sporty. She's very confident. And she did such a great job here. And they all call me the shrimp because I'm so short. And she's into, you know, Stormzy, and she comes with me to Glastonbury. So she's a real, real friend, I think.
We'll touch on Glastonbury a bit later. There's another story there, isn't there? But, okay, so you moved down to this area.
Yes.
What brought you particularly? Was it the fact your parents were here?
Parents were down here, and I remember coming here sort of 1998, 1999, just before the millennium. It was a lovely autumn Saturday and the market was in full swing. And I remember the sun dappling on the lovely Sherborne stone as I sort of wandered from the almshouses up to the abbey and then up to the market and thinking idly that this will be a fantastic place to live. So that was my very first experience.
It does look lovely in the sun, doesn't it? Mm. Okay, and then you took a job then, didn't you? You didn't stay with the consultancy. Well, I don't know, did that end or you ended up working for the fire service?
Yeah, when Hermione was a baby, I'd finished the consultancy because I just wanted to be at home with her. Sure. So the fire service, I got a little part-time job as a diversity trainer because the fire service was sort of coming out behind the big red doors and starting to do more prevention work with the community. They'd realised that actually, you know, putting out fires, we do very, very well, but the focus is on preventing it happening in the first place. So for the new chief of fire, Darren Gunter, fire was a failure. So he said, let's get out and educate the public. So to some firefighters, that was a bit of a challenge, I think it's fair to say. And I was hired to actually go out and talk to firefighters and explain to them, you know, all the benefits of actually doing this education stuff. You know, it was tough for people because, you know, after you know, being a response service for so long, they were now being asked to go into clubs and pubs and gay bars and nurseries. And it was quite challenging for people who perhaps weren't used to that training or that education type side to their role. So that was my role, really. I went in there and kind of did that work part time. And then they offered me full time and then they offered me a manager's role. And then it kind of went from there.
And you stayed with them and currently still work for the fire service. You work for the Dorset and Wiltshire Fire Service and you're the Learning and Development Manager, is that correct?
Yes, I'm now the Learning and Development Manager and I'm a duty safeguarding lead. But in my career, though, I've been the diversity trainer, as I said. I've been the diversity and inclusion manager and I've been the community engagement and partnership manager, looking after all our 100 volunteers who do such a brilliant job for us, are very much like, you know, Abbey 104, where it's a community-based radio station. They are volunteers, and we have over 120 now. They give their own time, and they do go to fetes, and they sign people up for home safety checks, and they go along to flu clinics. So last year, for example, in Sherborne, you know, we took over 3,000 home safety check referrals. And I was one of the team, I suppose, going in to help. And as people were having their flu jabs, I'd say, you know, and by the way, madam, can we offer you a free home safety check? Everything we do in the fire service is free. You know, we will check all of your appliances, your white goods. You know, we will go in and do a proper service. And you can also borrow blankets and the heaters, a heater loan scheme. There's lots and lots of things we do and it's all free.
That's a great message to get out because I guess a lot of people don't see that side of the fire and rescue service, do they? Just assume that it's responsive rather than proactive.
That's very true. And I think the more proactive we can be, the more we can work in partnership with the community, the better we can observe these risks and sort
Absolutely.
Them out.
Okay. We're going to take your next piece of music in a moment, but along the way here, your father sadly passed away, didn't he? And you described him off air to me as being your hero, which is not uncommon with a parent and child relationship, but he was a big influence.
Absolutely. Tom Warburton was, you know, a real hero. So he was in work for quite a well-known company, and then he became a territorial soldier, but he joined a special services unit, and kind of they really wanted him. And he did very well in that, and then he ended up in intelligence there. But he would run regularly. He'd take people on guided walks, and he is a man of huge integrity, perhaps not the world's integrity, but huge integrity. You know, he would say, you know, I believe in you. Do what you have to do. I believe in you. And often when I come back from job interviews, you know, depressed and sad that I hadn't got the job, he'd say, "Don't worry, Jill, the champagne is still on ice." And that was his one of his
he
mantras.
Would pick you up.
Absolutely.
Right, we'll play this next one in memory of your father. And it's the Bruck Violin Concerto. Why have you chosen that?
The Bruck Violin Concerto for me is really about my faith, and faith is really big for me. Brooke, Dad also liked Brooke. And as you know, well, people may not be aware, but Max Brooke, the concerto was first heard in 1866, and Max Brooke came from Cologne. He was destitute, and he sold the score and gave it to be sold over in America to get some money back. But when he died, the people who had taken it to sell it hadn't come back to him. So his daughter put on his headstone, "Music is the language of God." And for me, if you listen to this track, you can actually hear the irritation and the worry of the violins getting higher and higher and higher and higher. And then you can hear the bassoons, I think it is, coming in with, "Be still and know that I am God." And for me, my faith is the wellspring of what I do.
Let's have the music. Adagio from the Violin Concerto No. 1 in G minor, Opus 26, No. 2. That was the Philharmonia Orchestra, directed conducted by Walter Suskind, and probably one of the most romantic, one of the most famous romantic violin concertos, isn't it?
I think so, yes.
Great piece of music. In the studio is Jill Hogben, who is Mayor of Sherborne. Jill, we've come reasonably well up to date, haven't we? We've got to the stage where you are in the Dorset and Wiltshire Fire and Rescue Service. You continue to work for them. Mm-hmm. But tell me now how you came to be involved in local politics and local community work.
Okay. Well, Terry, I was a parish councillor. When I used to live in a small village on the outskirts, on the Dorset-Somerset borders, I was a parish councillor. And I really, really enjoyed it. We'd kind of get around someone's kitchen table and make those decisions about the village and so on. And the village was absolutely tiny. We had a four street and a back street, and that was kind of it. And it was a very, very informal, very, very involving. And I really enjoyed it. So when we moved to Sherborne, I thought I could perhaps do some good. I could benefit the community and I could stand up for what I care about. So I was elected in 2015. So I guess I've been in sort of local government, if you'd like to call it that, for about 15 years on and off. And I really, really enjoy it. So I was going to say that the next election is 2019 for town councillors. So if you have thought about standing up for what you believe in, what you care about, getting involved with the community, we're always looking for more councillors because councillors always step up and step down. It's a four-year term. And it's so worthwhile. It gives so much back. And it's really wonderful to get involved with community projects and community work. So if any of the listeners, you know, you're thinking about volunteering for something and you do want to get involved, you perhaps care about local issues, this role might be for you. I wouldn't say if you're terribly political, if you care about, you know, the Conservatives or Liberals, or I wouldn't say this might not be for you, because we always put our party politics aside for the good of the town. So I think that's the main feature for me. If you want to be a local town councillor, for me, it's about putting all of that away and focusing on what's best for the people of Sherborne.
If you look at the population of the area which you represent, for every one of you that stands up and says, I want to get involved, there's probably, I don't know, 50 or 100 people that sit at home and don't want to get involved. What are the rewards of actually getting up out of your armchair and doing it?
Well, I think you're right, Terry, but on the other hand, you know, there are over 125 voluntary groups in Sherborne alone. And there is a huge amount of goodwill out there from the community. So I hear what you're saying, and I agree that there are people who don't want to get involved, but there are a great many people out there who, from their own goodwill, give up their own time to come and help at the Yetman Hospital or the variety of other projects, programmes and societies, clubs, etc. What would I say to them? I'd say, if you want things to change, you need to do something about it. Because councils, top tier councils, so Dorset County Council, West Dorset District Council, they are divesting and devolving because there isn't enough money to go around. So they're going to be focusing on, you know, some of the central core services they have to deliver by law. So a lot of the other stuff that people took for granted actually is going to be lost, or it's going to be devolved down to local level. So if you want to get involved in working out where that should be, then, you know, stand up, be counted, join the council or join one of these other fantastic groups.
And what's involved in being a councillor? So you've been elected, and what do you have to do?
OK, well, there are we have monthly council meetings. They're normally the third Monday of every month. 6:45 start, and they're public meetings. They're all open, and one of the key things about being a councillor is that our job is to work for you. So everything we do is open to scrutiny and open to public involvement. So if you want to come along to one of these meetings, you can speak at these meetings. You can let your voice be heard. So they're once a month. We have planning meetings once a month. And there are a variety of subgroups and committees that look at other things. So we've got a group looking at devolution. We've got a group working with the proposed arts centre. So we've got a lot of things going on at the moment.
Okay, and you don't need any particular qualifications. Anybody can stand up and say, I'm prepared to do this?
No, you have to live or work in Sherborne. You have to have that care for the town. You have to have that perhaps that knowledge of the town. But it's to represent the town. My job is to represent the town. I'm the first citizen, if you like. We are wholly accountable to you. So like the fire service, we do work for you. So that's my role. There's also a lot of civic and ceremonial duties. You know, we have such a wonderful history in the town. For example, this weekend I'm going to go up to Lichfield to the National Arboretum with my mother, who's my consort. And we're going to be meeting some senior figures and the colonel of the Devon and Dorset Regiment. And there's going to be a dedication there in memory of all the work that the people of Sherborne have done in the war and all the memory of our fantastic armed services. So that's going to be the weekend. I'm going to go and go to a prize giving for the Griffin in the Abbey. I've just toured the Yetman Hospital. I went round to talk to all the patients there and praise the fantastic work that Anne Hiscock, the matron, and all the staff were doing. That was Friday. And also Friday, I went to lunch with the headmaster of the International School just down the road from here and was talking about, you know, how schools can get involved in the life of the town, how schools can be much more engaged with and supportive of each other and how they can get involved with projects like the recent project that the International School and Tim there have been doing with the hospital. And that was such a great project.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the role of the mayor in a moment, but mm-hmm. let's have your next track, which is The Pretenders, Back on a Chain Gang. So why did you choose this?
Well, I don't want to say, but we, all the mayors across Dorset, we're known collectively as the Chain Gang, Terry. I'm very sorry about
Can't
this.
Can't think why.
So here's Chrissy. I saw her at Glastonbury with my daughter, Hermione, where we volunteer, and she was brill.
All right, it's The Pretenders, Back on the Chain Gang.
I found a picture of you. Oh, what hijacked my world at night? A place in the past we've been cast out of. Oh, now we're back in the fight. We're back on the train. Control. Oh, the phone, TV, and the news of the world. Got in the house like a pigeon from hell. Oh, threw sand in our eyes and descended like flies. Put us back on the train.
Pretenders, Back on the Chain Gang. from 1982 and chosen by my guest in the studio, Jill Hogben, on what we might call a specially extended edition of Folk Tales, because it's 5 to 12, but we haven't got anywhere.
I've been talking too much, Terry, I'm sorry.
That's what the show is all about. We like people that talk, because we don't have anybody following us, then we can carry on for a little bit longer, and I think we'll do that, shall we?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you were elected to the role of deputy mayor. That would have been a year ago in May then. You mm-hmm. took on that role. And then how does that work? That's an internal election within the council, is it?
Yes. I think all the councillors get together and they vote on who should be the next deputy mayor and mayor. And then they also decide who should be the representative from the council on all of the groups we're members of. So, for example, I'm a member of the Yetman Friends, and I find that so, so rewarding. And all of our councillors have three or four, perhaps, primary functions in terms of sitting on membership of the Chamber of Trade or you know, there may be the footpath representative, or they may be, you know, working with, I don't know, the Police and Crime Commissioner. So there are lots of different you know, areas where we get involved, and that can be very useful, because if you're interested in a particular area, why not get involved? So absolutely. My colleague Kate Pike takes planning and so on. So it's really worthwhile.
All right. So you signified that you were willing to become deputy mayor, which inevitably then means you become mayor a year later.
What did I let myself in
yeah,
for?
Yeah, absolutely. So you were elected mayor then back in May.
Yeah.
And, well, OK, tell us what a typical day in the life of the mayor of Sherborne is then.
On Friday, I went for my mayor meeting, which happens from 9 till 10 every Friday, with the deputy mayor and my town clerk. And we sit and talk through the issues that have arisen in the last week. And we make appointments and we plan the town council actions and agenda for the next town council meeting. And we talk through any concerns. So this Friday we were talking about the roadworks and how we can help people with that. Is there anything we can do? And then we're looking at things that might be coming out in the next month. So that's from 9 till 10. And then 10 o'clock, we had a meeting about, my mayor's business challenges. So we had a little sort of subcommittee meeting. I want to set some challenges for businesses in the town, because I want us all to be working together, and I want the town council to support business more. So I'm going to set two challenges. Can I tell you about
that? Please do. Yeah.
The first challenge is that Dorset has dementia-friendly towns, and Sherborne is the second dementia-friendly town in Dorset, but not many people know about that. And the Alzheimer's Society have been working very, very hard with the fire service and the police and some organisations within Sherborne to train their staff to be dementia friends. And you'll know a dementia friend because they've got a little blue forget-me-not badge. And it's particularly important for shops and, you know, the big supermarkets to have places where, or people that know to talk to somebody if they have dementia, and can help them or the carers if they need help. So, you know, one of my stories is that I found a lady wandering down Cheap Street who didn't know where she lived, and kind of eventually pieced out where she lived, and I walked her home. But there are, as you know, in Sherborne, we have 28% of people in Sherborne are 65 and over. And that gives us a particular dynamic in the town. So anyway, my mayor's challenge is that if businesses train their staff in this free training, which is 45 minutes, the suggestion is that as well as becoming dementia friends with the Alzheimer's Society, which is obviously a hugely reputable organisation, they will also get the Mayor's Achievement Award. And the more businesses we can get involved in this, and we're working with the Chamber of Trade, and we're about to launch this, hopefully, when the council have finally approved it. We've had those discussions. So there at the moment, we're just sort of talking through the issues, talking through how we would work this. But the idea is to launch this at the end of the year, and then to have this as a Mayor's Business Challenge, and successful organisations will be able to have an award which they can display. So that's the first Mayor's Business Challenge. And the second one, Terry, really is around procurement. I want people to consider local procurement, because for every pound you spend locally, there's 65p benefit for the local community. And there's some national figures about that. So if businesses can show us that they source their staff and their products locally, I think that's a real benefit. So I'm talking with my councillors about a second business challenge, which is around, you know, if people can show that they source locally, they get their goods and their milk and their vegetables from within 10 miles radius of Sherborne, they'll get a Mayor's Business Award for that.
And you're actively speaking with businesses around that topic, are you?
We're talking to the Chamber of Trade and Commerce, and you know, they've sent an email to say they're very much in favour of it in principle. We just need to work through the detail, and then we're going to be launching that in the autumn, a bit later on, next couple of months, hopefully.
Oh, sounds very good, absolutely. I mean, looking at Sherborne, a lot of people looking in from outside would say, well, Sherborne's you know, it's got lots of private schools and, you know, lots of retired military people. It's quite an affluent area, really, isn't it? Is that fair, or is there another side to Sherborne?
Yes, there is. And I guess that's one of the benefits of being mayor, because you see all sides of Sherborne. We know that we have a high proportion of people aged over 65, and we know that the 85s are projected to double between now and 2035. So it's a fast growing group of people, the over 85s. So although we are a very affluent town, we also could be considered deprived in some ways because of the barriers we have to essential services. So it's access to facilities, it's things like buses, it's things like access to the NHS. So you know, 41% of us in Dorset live in rural areas. So how are we going to get around if we can't drive our own cars? House prices in Dorset are 10 times lower than the lower end earnings. So in other words, if you're in a less well-paid job, you know, your likelihood of getting a house is going to be 10 times less than other people. So
some of those are quite big national issues, though. What can you do locally about some of those things?
I think we can raise those issues up. We can talk about them. We can discuss them. We can debate them. You know, we can get those. We've got 125 community groups. We can get those groups working with us to try and look at and solve some of these issues. On our town council, we've got Dorset County councillors. So John Andrews, my colleague, is also a county councillor. And he's very, very aware of some of these issues. So I think the more we can debate and raise these issues, the better. And on the other hand, of course, as I said before, we've got the top tier councils devolving more stuff down to us. So it's I think in the future, if I was to have a glass ball and looking into the future, I think more and more of these things are going to get devolved down to a local level. So it's how we manage those.
Yeah, that's good. You mentioned that there's 125 voluntary groups in and around the town and the local area. That was great, isn't it? But what can you do to improve the way? Is there good cohesion? Is there good linking in between those groups? What can you do to help that?
I think the groups we have in Sherborne are amazing. I think they are staffed by dedicated, supportive people who work incredibly hard. I'm just thinking of the red bus that goes around. I'm thinking about ArtsLink. I'm thinking about, you know, all the groups. And every year, of course, they have that fantastic Christmas tree show in one of our local churches. And you can see a Christmas tree from almost every group, which is wonderfully decorated. I think it's about putting people in touch with one another. If someone is doing a Parkinson's dance, or you know, if someone's doing a memory cafe, if someone's doing some work with dementia patients in hospital, let's put them together. Let's put those groups together to do joined up working for the benefit of people with dementia and their carers. Let's not work in silos here. Let's try and share those resources, share that experience around.
And I think you said before we came on air that you saw your role as being to oil the wheels with that and to put people in touch with each other and make sure they talk effectively.
Yes, very much so. You know, Anne Hiscock and the team at the Yetman do a fantastic job in so many areas. But again, it's letting people know the work they do, and it's linking them up with other dementia groups. And so I think it's joining the dots really and putting people together.
What do you need most in Sherborne now? Lots of voluntary groups there. Are you lacking money, lacking volunteers, lacking resources in any way?
That's a really good question. I think we need more volunteers. I think we need almost to have like a volunteers fair where people can go and put themselves forward. I think for me in Sherborne, taking the other end of the spectrum, I'm also very, very interested in young people's mental health issues. And I think after the tragedy last year, it's really focused the mind of the town council in terms of the support we can give people with mental health issues and what's out there to help people. And I don't think parents, as a parent myself of a teen, I don't think people are aware of what resources, what support there is out there. So for me, it would be helping people to understand what resources are there in terms of young people's mental health, and also supporting our volunteers and making sure we have enough of them.
Excellent. Okay. And we talked earlier about the need for people to be prepared to stand up and come forward and say, yes, I'm willing to be elected to the local council. Nationally, again, there's a bit of a disengagement really from politics over the recent years. Does that equally apply locally? And if so, how do we get over it?
Well, I hope not. I think it's easy to get disengaged from politics when it's at the senior, you know, the top national level. But I think when it's local issues, local concerns, I think it's much easier because you see the connection. For example, we're trying to get young people more interested in the work of the council and help the council be more known about. And we're trying to help that make those connections. So we have young people on the council, a young person's council, and they come to every council meeting. We're looking at ways we can get the young people of the schools more involved with the local town, perhaps in things like doing a disability access survey, the local shops or things like that. I'm just quite conscious that, we have a fantastic food bank, for example. And over the summer holiday, it's been really tough for some people. We were talking earlier, weren't we, about, you know, is Sherborne a deprived area? Is Sherborne a wealthy area? Well, actually, you know, there are a lot of children on free school meals in Sherborne, and the food bank does a brilliant job, but it's needed. And, you know, over the summer holiday, those hot meals aren't available from school. So how do families cope? So I'm very lucky, really, working with the fire service as a safeguarding lead has also helped me to see the other side, where people might be house rich, cash poor, and where people are really struggling at both ends of the spectrum, the older and the younger, to make ends meet.
I'm interested also, people see the mayor wandering around and you wear your chain and I guess they buttonhole you as you come down the main street,
yes.
Down Tube Street. Some of them probably come to you with expectations of things that you can't really realise. Is there a big mismatch between what the mayor can achieve and what people expect?
There is a bit of a mismatch because people think we have autonomy, complete autonomy. And I think that actually when you look at the services we have power over and the services that Dorset County Council own and manage, so, you know, the car parks don't belong to us, planning permissions, planning changes. You know, we've had lots of discussion about Cheap Street shops recently. And actually, we are only a consultee. We don't have the final word, although we'd love to. There's been quite a lot on Somerset Live about various issues. And although we have very strong views as a council, we want to work for the good of the town, sometimes we're not really able to do everything we want to do.
No.
But I can, you know, I can go and talk to, I can intervene for and say to various parties, have you thought about this? Have you considered this? We don't agree with that. So I guess it's making our voice known.
And the elected mayors in the bigger cities, of course, have a lot more powers, don't they? And that's a different setup altogether than this.
Yes, they do. But if, you know, we don't know what's happening with devolution of as we talked about, they call it double devolution, don't they? It's Dorset County and also West Dorset and all the other district councils, perhaps devolving, moving some of their responsibilities down a bit. So we don't know what we might have to take on. So that's another thing we have to think about for the future.
OK. We're going to break and have your penultimate piece of music, which is Mika. Why with this one?
Oh, well, we've been talking about children. We've been talking about children's needs. Mika was very badly bullied at school. And for me, this song, We Are Golden, is about young people's issues and reminding us that teenagers and children are absolutely wonderful and need to be understood and loved and cherished.
Mika, We Are Golden.
Teenage dreams in a teenage circus, running around like a clown on purpose. Who gives a damn about the family you come from? Don't give it up when you're young and you want some.
That's Mika and We Are Golden from the second album, The Boy Who Knew Too Much, 2009. That was got to number 4 in the UK. Mika, otherwise known as Michael Holbrook Pennyman Jr., who's now 34 years old. Jill, we've been talking a lot about your current role as mayor, and I just sort of finish off on that. There's a ceremonial side to it as well, isn't there?
Oh, yes, very much so. As I say, I go around with a chain. I'm involved in lots of ceremonial responsibilities and events, which are hugely fun. Each mayor, actually, you may not know this, it's a secret, but I can tell you, that's where, you know, we're together, Terry. But each mayor has a day, if they want to use it, where they can show off the kind of the benefits of their town and all the attractions their town or their area has to offer. So each mayor has a chance for a civic day once a year. And they're happening at the moment. So, I don't know, East Dorset District Council or Charminster may show you, where they make gin, or they may show you a fantastic elderly person's residence. So I'm going to go on a couple of those in the next few weeks. So civic days are interesting, fun, and kind of ceremonial.
Sounds great.
Oh, also,
yes.
I forgot to mention that I'm not quite sure whether I'd like to do this, but on the death of a notable figure, for example, a royal figure, my civic and ceremonial duty is to go out into the street with my chain on and announce the death of this figure.
Almost like a town crier.
A bit like a, you know, the Queen is dead, long live the...
Yeah.
Almost like that. And yes. I'm quite nervous about it, actually, because I know it's for some people you might think, well, yeah, we've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, we can just find out about it. But actually, It's the weight of the sort of civic duty of actually going out there and announcing it in a very formal way through the town. That's quite big. That sounds quite important stuff.
You're praying for the health of all local notary figures.
Fervently praying that everybody's feeling very, very well.
Okay, you've also got a number of good causes that you support. And what are they?
Yes. My mayor's charities this year, and every year the mayor gets to choose some charities, and hopefully I want to be running some charitable events to support them. I support the Rendezvous. Because of the fantastic work with children and young people with mental health issues or who may be in need of extra help and support. I support the Yetman Friends. I think they do a wonderful job. And we've made some huge changes in there and more changes yet to make. But some of their end-of-life suites are superb. The Ada Cavell, I toured around there on Friday. Very, very moving. And Anne and all the team down there do brilliant work. And finally, the rugby club and cricket club extension. You know, I think for me, let's get people physically healthy. Let's get people of any age, you know, working and training. So the rugby club and cricket club here in Sherborne, and the football club and you know the tennis club, they're amazing, and they take children, you know, as young as sort of 4 and 5 and train them up. To be healthier, to be happier, to be fitter, to engage in those team sports and build confidence. So the coaches down there at the Rugby and Cricket Club are amazing. So if we can get them a bigger, better pavilion, better facilities, let's do that.
Fantastic. And what should people do who may be listening today if they have any ideas or they have concerns that they would want to raise with you? What sort of things can they raise with you and how do they do it?
Well, you can raise any concern with me. If I can't help you, I will forward you on through our town clerk to the people that can help you. Dorset for You is a great website as well, by the way. I must give that a plug. But if you write to me via the clerk, that's t.savage@sherbornetc.gov.uk. He'll be able to direct your concern to me and I'll be able to help or support or signpost you in the right direction. Terry, could I just mention one more important cause for me? This is a typical of Sherburnians, typical of Sherborne people. Every year on Christmas Day, we have a Christmas lunch for people who are alone. It doesn't matter what your circumstances are. It doesn't matter, you know, who you are. We provide a Christmas lunch at the Digby Hall. It's the Churches Together group, but you can be of any faith or no faith. So I'm doing a plug for it. I do the cooking and I help manage the fantastic volunteers who give their time to peel mountains of Brussels sprouts trees and sacks of potatoes and sacks of parsnips. So a plug for you. If you're thinking about Christmas lunch, if you're going to be on your own this Christmas, please get in touch with Sherborne Churches Together. And book a place at that table. It's not just a meal, it's a Christmas party. There are crackers and quizzes and prizes, and it's a hugely fun event, lots of music. And actually, Terry, someone from 104 could, lovely if you could join us.
We will take you up on that, definitely.
Thank you.
Right, Jill, we've talked a great deal about your career and your role as mayor. Your Twitter profile says, adventurer and lifelong learner, who aims to challenge unfairness and stand up for others. What's the adventure in the lifelong learning bit of it?
Well, I do love adventures. I do love journeys. So I volunteer at Glastonbury. I'm a steward manager.
Oh, okay.
So obviously, I there are over 100,000 people come each year. And I love getting involved in that way. We've had a very, very interesting last couple of Glastonburys. That was brilliant. And I love travel. And I've got, you know, I'm very, very interested in supporting the town through things like volunteering for Christmas lunches. I'd love to be more adventurous. I think at the moment I'm moving house, so I'd like to be more, but perhaps after Christmas.
It's a bit of an adventure in itself, isn't it? So as of next May, you will then no longer be mayor, but you're still on the town council.
Mm-hmm.
What after that? Any future ambitions?
Oh, I don't know, actually. I've always wanted to walk in Patagonia. I loved going out to Borneo. I might perhaps go out there again, perhaps do some volunteering work out there.
Lovely.
But let's see how the house move goes, and let's see whether they still want me on the council after 2019.
And OK, just to finish off, so how do you then, what do? You go home and how do you relax?
Well, I have a wonderful cat who's very, very charming, yeah, called Jin. I have a fantastic family. I like to go to the gym here. There are so many great places to exercise here around Sherborne. So I go to the Oxleys, but there are other gyms are available, as they say. So I like to keep fit. I like to walk. I'm an amateur geologist, so I like to go down to Lyme and hunt for fossils or hunt for iron pyrites. And I love social history. So, as I say, I'm reading the history of Sherborne in more detail, and I'm only up to the 12th century. So
there's plenty to go.
I think so.
Jill, it's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you for coming in. And we'll play your last track, which is by Tunde Bayawayu. And the track is called Awake.
Yes, he's one of the original members of the Lighthouse family, who I love their easy listening songs. So it's a beautiful track.
And this is from 2013. As you say, he's one of the two part of the Lighthouse family duo who branched out and started his own career in 2004. Mm. Jill, it's been great, as I say, talking to you. Thanks for coming in. And we wish you well with the remainder of your term as mayor and whatever you choose to do after that.
Terry, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real honour.
Thank you.
Ain't you lucky that you found yourself in the place where you are now? 'Cause the people here will love you, babe, exactly as you are. Lift your head up and start the day. There ain't no other way. Pick your feet up and thank the sky that you're awake. You are awake. They didn't like the way you hold yourself. They didn't like the way you shine. I don't think that you should mold yourself to the apple in someone else's eye. Lift your head up and start the day. There ain't no other way. Pick your feet up and you're awake. You are awake. Sometimes the price that you're searching for, it ain't the one that you receive. It's hard to let go without giving up on something you believe. As the shadow, it'll follow you, though you run and try to hide. You might stand next to the darkness, girl, but you're standing in the light. Hold your head up and start the day. There ain't no other way. Pick your feet up and thank the sky that you're awake. You are awake.